Welcome back to Mechanical Dreams, the podcast where we dream of electric sheep and then argue about the learning rate required to count them. I'm Professor Norris.
And I'm Linda. And Professor, you're sounding a little weary today. Did another training run diverge over the weekend?
Linda, training large language models these days feels less like computer science and more like medieval alchemy. You throw in a learning rate, sprinkle some weight decay, chant a few incantations about cosine schedules, and hope the loss curve goes down instead of exploding into nans.
It is a bit of a dark art, isn't it? Just guessing numbers and hoping for the best. But what if I told you there's a way to turn that alchemy into actual rigorous chemistry?
I would say you've been reading too many papers from the future, or you're about to try to sell me a bridge.
No bridges today, just a paper from Apple that dropped late in 2025. It's titled Completed Hyperparameter Transfer Across Modules with Depth, Batch, and Duration. The lead author is Bruno Molodziejczyk.
That is quite a mouthful of a title, but I hear the magic word transfer. They're claiming they can solve the tuning problem on a toy model and just copy-paste it to a big one?
Exactly. They propose a method to tune hyperparameters on a tiny model, something you could run on a single GPU in an afternoon, and mathematically guarantee that those settings will work on a massive cluster-scale model.
We've seen attempts at this before, Linda. The tensor programs work, MuP. It's brilliant theory, but it usually falls apart when you change something practical, like the badge size or the number of tokens.
And that's exactly why this paper is special. It's not just width anymore. They're handling depth, batch size, training duration, and get this, they're tuning parameters differently for every single module in the network.
Per module tuning. That sounds like a nightmare. That's not a recipe. That's 1,000 different recipes cooking at once.
It sounds chaotic, but they claim it leads to massive speedups, like getting the same performance in half the time.
Half the time? All right, put away the cauldron, Linda. I'm listening. So, Linda, before we get into the new magic, let's ground this. In the old days, and by old days, I mean 3 years ago, if I wanted to scale up a model, I'd just take my best guesses for the learning rate, maybe divide by the square root of the hidden dimension, cross my fingers and hit run. Usually it diverged.
Right. That's what we call standard parameterization, or SP. And mathematically, we know why it fails now. As the model gets wider, the activations eventually blow up, or the updates become so small, the model stops learning features. It's a mess.
Which brings us to the hero of 2022, the maximal update parameterization, or MU. I must admit, even I like that one. The idea that you can tune your hyperparameters on a tiny toy model, and if you set up your scaling rules correctly, those same numbers work on a giant model. That is elegant.
It is. Greg Yang and his colleagues really changed the game with that. Basically, MuP ensures that as you scale the widths, the number of neurons or heads, the training dynamics stay stable. It keeps the feature learning consistent so you don't have to retune everything from scratch.
But, and I sense a but coming from the way you're looking at your motes.
The but is that width isn't everything, Professor. MuP is derived strictly for the infinite width limit. But look at modern LLMs. We aren't just making them wider. We're making them deeper, stacking way more layers. We're training them on trillions of tokens, and we're using massive batch sizes to parallelize the compute.
And I assume MuP has nothing to say about those other dimensions.
Exactly. If you take your MuP settings and just double the depth or change the batch size significantly, the transfer breaks. You're back to guessing. For example, the paper points out that standard MuP doesn't account for how learning rates should decay when you train for longer durations, or how weight decay interacts with batch size.
I see. So we have a map that only works if we drive purely east, but we're trying to drive north, south, and up at the same time. And I suppose simply tuning these things by trial and error on a 7 billion parameter model is...
prohibitively expensive. You'd burn through our entire semester's compute budget before lunch. We need a way to predict the optimal settings for depth, batch size, and token count without actually running the big job first.
So we need to complicate the math to save the budget. typical. But I am skeptical, Linda. Adding more rules often just adds more points of failure. Are they claiming to have solved the scaling laws for everything at once?
Pretty much. That's why they call it complete parameterization. They're trying to close the loop on all the missing axes that MuP left out.
So, we've had standard parameterization, then we had MuP, then depth MuP, and now complete DP? With the D in parentheses? It looks like a typo in a sophomore C++ code, Linda. Are they unsure if they actually finished it?
It's a bit of a pun, Professor. It stands for complete parameterization. But the parenthetical D signals that they have completed the work started by Dai et al. Earlier this year. They essentially argue that the previous attempts were, well, incomplete.
Incomplete how? Did they forget to carry a one?
Close. They found some subtle but critical issues when applying the theory to modern architectures. Specifically, query key normalization, or QK norms.
Ah, yes. The safety rails of the transformer keeps the attention logits from growing too large and saturating the softmax. I assume they cause trouble for scaling because they tamper with the signal variance.
Exactly. In most modern transformers, QK norm parameters are shared across all the attention heads. Standard scaling rules assume that when you scale up width, you're just adding more independent heads. But because these weights are shared, the gradients accumulate differently than standard layers.
I see. If you simply widen the model without accounting for that sharing, the signal strength for those specific parameters would blow up. It breaks the infinite width limit assumption.
Precisely. So complete DP introduces a fix for these shared weights to ensure the math holds up. But honestly, fixing the width scaling is just the appetizer. The main course, and what I think you'll love, is how they handle batch size and training duration.
Now that is the holy grail. Scaling width is structural, but batch size is procedural. Usually people just wave their hands, say linear scaling rule, and hope the model converges. I've seen that fail more times than I've had hot dinners.
They didn't use a heuristic this time. They went back to first principles using stochastic differential equations.
SDEs. Now you are speaking my language. Treating the optimizer's trajectory as a discretization of a continuous stochastic process. It is elegant. It assumes the noise in your gradients, which comes from the mini-batching, is part of the diffusion term in the equation.
Spot on. They extend this SDE view specifically for Adam W. Most people forget that Adam W isn't just SGD with momentum. The adaptive learning rate makes the dynamics tricky. The paper proves that to keep the SDE dynamics invariant, when you change batch size, you need a square root scaling rule.
Square root? Not linear? The folklore has always been double the batch size, double the learning rate.
That works for SGD, mostly. But for Adam W, because of the variance normalization, they derive that you must scale both the learning rate and the weight decay by the square root of the batch size multiplier.
Wait, they scale the weight decay too? Usually people treat weight decay as this separate knob you just twiddle until the loss goes down.
That's a huge contribution here. They show that if you don't scale the weight decay along with the learning rate according to this SDE rule, the transfer fails. They call it maintaining the effective step size. It keeps the signal-to-noise ratio and the optimization process constant.
I suppose that makes sense. If you take fewer steps because your batches are larger, the regularization penalty per step needs to be stronger, but the adaptive magnitude complicates it. So the square root balances the adaptive term scaling.
Exactly. And they apply the same SDE logic to the training duration, the token horizon. They call it the SDE ISO horizon scaling rule. Basically, if you want to train a model for a trillion tokens, you adjust the hyperparameters so that the SDE's integration horizon covers that longer distance without distorting the signal dynamics.
So, if I want to train a model for a trillion tokens, I can simulate the dynamics on a billion tokens, find the optimal hyperparameters, and then use this SD scaling to mathematically project them out to the full run?
Yes! It aligns the signal-to-noise ratio so that the optimization path on the short run effectively mimics the path of the long run.
It's a grand unified theory of hyperparameter scaling. Width, depth, batch size, time. It turns what is usually alchemy into a physics simulation. I admit, Linda, I am finding it very hard to stay skeptical about this one.
All right, Linda, I'm following you so far. We have this grand unified theory, complete DP, which sounds like a very aggressive dental procedure, by the way. It handles width, depth, batch size, time, the whole physics simulation of the model.
It really does, but here is where they pull the rug out from under us, Professor. Normally when we train a model, what do? We pick a global learning rate, maybe a global weight decay, and we apply it to everything.
Naturally. One learning rate to rule them all. Simple, elegant, and it prevents me from having to manage a spreadsheet with 1,000 columns.
Well, the authors argue that treating every parameter the same is actually leaving performance on the table. Think about it. Should the embedding layer really learn at the exact same speed as the attention heads deep in the network? Should the normalization layers have the same weight decay as the MLPs?
I mean, intuitively, probably not. But practically, Linda, if I start tuning a separate learning rate for every single component, I'm not doing machine learning anymore. I'm doing combinatorial torture. The search space would be infinite.
It is huge. They identified 79 different hyperparameters to tune. Not just learning rates, but atom betas, epsilon, initialization scales, specifically optimized for each module type, and even varying by depth.
79? You want me to tune 79 knobs simultaneously? That's not a hyperparameter search. That's a cockpit for a space shuttle. How do you even optimize that without burning through a century of GPU time?
That is exactly the problem. They looked at the loss landscape for these per module parameters, and it is nasty. It's not a nice smooth bowl where you can just roll a marble down to the bottom.
Let me guess. It's full of local minima?
Actually, it's remarkably close to being invex, meaning the stationary points are global minima, but the danger is the boundaries. The landscape is full of cliffs.
Cliffs?
Sharp drop-offs where the training just diverges, NANs everywhere. One minute your loss is improving, you step slightly too far with the attention key learning rate, and boom, model collapse. Because of these sharp cliffs, standard Bayesian optimization struggled because Gaussian processes generally assume the world is somewhat smooth.
So if Bayesian optimization is out and grid search is impossible, did they just use a dartboard?
Close. They use something called trust region random search. It's actually quite clever in its simplicity. You start with a best guess, then you define a trust region, a box around that guess.
Like a safety zone.
Exactly. You sample random configurations only from inside that box. If you find a new best point, you move the center of your box to that point. If you don't find anything better for a while, you assume you're close to the optimum, so you shrink the box to refine the search.
I see. So instead of trying to map the whole jagged continent, you're just feeling your way down the mountain in the dark, keeping your hands close to your body so you don't fall off one of those cliffs.
That's a great analogy. And because they do this on a small 50 million parameter proxy model, they can afford to run thousands of these trials. It's computationally cheap.
Right. And this brings us back to the unified theory. The only reason they can waste time tuning 79 knobs on a baby model is because they are confident those knobs will transfer to the big model.
Precisely. If complete DP works, those per module settings like setting the embedding learning rate lower or the depth-wise multipliers should just work on the 7 billion parameter model without retuning.
It's a high-risk, high-reward strategy. You spend your budget up front on a complex search, betting the farm that the transfer holds. If it doesn't, you just overfitted a toy model.
But if it does work, you potentially get a model that trains significantly faster because every single neuron is learning at its own optimal pace. It's like giving every student in a classroom a personalized curriculum instead of one lecture for everyone.
Okay, you've piqued my interest. The methodology is sound, if a bit terrifying. But does it actually work when they scale it up, or did the cliffs come back to haunt them? All right, Linda, we've got the fancy math, the stochastic differential equations, the fractal loss landscapes. It all sounds very impressive on a whiteboard, but the rubber has to meet the road eventually. Did they actually try this on a model that fits on more than a smartwatch?
They absolutely did, Professor. And this is the payoff. The whole premise of this completed parameterization is that you shouldn't have to tune hyperparameters on the big model. It's simply too expensive.
Tell me about it. One wrong learning rate on a 7 billion parameter run, and you've just burned a research grant the size of my mortgage.
Exactly. So they performed that expensive, jagged, cliff-filled search we talked about on a tiny proxy model, just 50 million parameters.
50 million? Linda, I have Excel spreadsheets bigger than that. That's a rounding error in modern NLP.
A useful rounding error. They found those specific per-module learning rates, different for embeddings, attention heads, MLPs, on the 50 million model. Then, using their completed rules, they translated those settings up to a 7 billion parameter model.
Translated, not just copy-pasted. I assume the math handled the scaling factors for width and depth.
Precisely. And the results were startling. On the small proxy model, the per-module approach was already 2.3 times faster than just tuning a single global learning rate. But the big question was, does that advantage transfer?
And did the magic hold up when they multiplied the compute budget by, what, 600 times?
And yes, it held up beautifully. The per-module settings, once scaled, resulted in a significant training speed-up on the large model. We're talking about reaching the same loss value much faster, about a 27% speed-up in compute to reach equivalent performance at the billion-parameter scale.
27%? In this economy? That is actually quite substantial. Usually when people say transfer, they mean it didn't explode immediately.
It's better than just not exploding. They checked downstream tasks too, reasoning benchmarks like Pika and Heliswag. The models trained with transferred per-module settings consistently outperformed the global baseline. They basically got a better model for less time just by doing their homework on the small model first.
So, you spend a weekend torturing a tiny 50 million parameter model until it confesses its optimal per-module secrets?
And then you apply those secrets to the 7 billion parameter giant, and it just works. No extra tuning required.
Well, I suppose I can't argue with efficiency like that. It's like testing a recipe in a thimble before cooking a banquet for 1,000 people.
And the banquet tastes better. The method is robust across the board.
I have to admit, Linda, when you first brought up per-module hyperparameter optimization, I had visions of a graduate student weeping softly in front of a server rack for 6 months. It sounded like a recipe for overfitting.
But
the SDE argument actually holds water. Treating the optimizer's discrete steps as an approximation of a continuous stochastic differential equation, that is the kind of rigorous mathematical grounding that warms an old skeptic's heart. It turns what looks like arbitrary heuristics into actual physics.
Exactly. It takes the magic out of it. We aren't just guessing that bigger batch means bigger learning rate. The math tells us exactly how to scale the noise and the decay so the training dynamics stay consistent. It means we can finally trust the small-scale experiments.
And that trust is expensive currency. If I can tune on a 50 million parameter model on a single GPU and know that those settings will hold up on a 7 billion parameter run, that changes the economics of research entirely.
Right? It democratizes things. You don't need a massive budget to find the optimal settings anymore. You just need a good proxy model and the right transfer rules. Plus, that 1.3x speedup on the final run is practically free performance.
Indeed. It seems the alchemists are finally learning chemistry. I suppose I might have to retire my jokes about hyperparameter tuning being a dark art. It's starting to look suspiciously like engineering.
Don't worry, Professor. We still have to pick the random seeds. There's still a little bit of magic left.
Comforting to know. Well, until next week, keep your gradients clipped and your learning rates scheduled. This has been Mechanical Dreams.